turnovers. They come in bunches, you know. We had got one, we got a strip, and then they just start coming.
You see the screen. Now the ball comes out. The ball comes out, and Jacksonville has it, I believe. A defensive takeaway at the best time for Jacksonville. Ronnie Harrison recovers it. Three right, two left, he drops. Fires, middle of the field. Intercepted by Miles Jack.
Anytime you have turnovers, or turnovers for points especially, it makes it a lot easier on us, takes a lot of pressure off.
Goes into four-man rush. It's going to be a screen, and it is picked off by Yannick Ngakoue to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, pick six, Yannick Ngakoue.
When that fourth quarter hit, you know what I'm saying, we knew we had to set them out. That's why when we play with a lead, man, once we get up on the team, bro, it's going to be hard to stop.
Just got a dub in Cincinnati. Duval!
1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Come on, bruh! We just got a dub, bruh!
Duval!
Come on, E! It's mid-season, baby! Let's do this. So, Tony, we got Ronnie Harrison.
I'll call him
Rodney Harrison. Ronnie Harrison? Miles Jack?
Where you gonna play?
Jan's making plays? We don't need this Isaiah Simmons. Where's he gonna play?
Safety.
Hey, Ronnie Harrison just made a play. Right there. You heard it. Come on. Are you on the Isaiah Simmons train?
I'm not off. Like, I'm not completely off the Isaiah Simmons train, would be the way that I would put it. Like, it's one of those where I would be surprised if Isaiah Simmons was available to them at 9. And if he was, I'd be 100% okay with them taking
him. You'd be surprised if he's available at 9?
Yes.
I just don't know about that. I don't know. I don't have a great feeling. One of these guys is going to fall down to him.
Yeah. I'd be more surprised if Isaiah fell to him than Derrick Brown.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, like I think that Isaiah is a much more highly thought of prospect than Derrick Brown at this point in the prospect, at least the way that everyone talks about the player.
But a lot of the teams that need Isaiah Simmons need a lot of other things too,
sure.
Like offensive line.
And the Jags are included in that.
Right, and I don't know. They are. I don't know. I could see Simmons being there. I absolutely could. Somebody, maybe a couple of these guys that we've talked a lot about are going to be there at 9, which makes today's question today a little intriguing.
Yeah.
Because who are you willing to pull the trigger for? Like, if Okuda gets to within what range are you willing to jump if you're an Okuda guy? Right, Jeffrey Okuda, the defensive back out of Ohio State.
Sure.
We're talking the shorthand by this point in time because we're 2 weeks and one day from the NFL draft getting underway, 2 weeks from the media mock draft. We just assume now everyone in the listening audience, when you say Okuda, you know what we're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Kinlaw, you know exactly what we're talking about.
Probably.
Right? I hope. C.J. Henderson, right? if we just say Diggs, you think they're down with that, Trevon Diggs?
Well, as long as it's in the context of draft.
Well, what else are we going to say?
Yeah, I mean, you could be talking about Stephon.
They're doing some digging on Better Call Saul this week, by the way. out in the desert, as they're wont to
as
do.
As they tend
it's
to
a good
do.
Episode.
Yeah.
It's a good episode of Better Call Saul this week. I know you're behind.
I am.
Right now. So it's my daily. Here's what I'm watching. I had to catch up because I didn't watch, because we watched McMillions on Monday, a few episodes of that, and I had to catch up yesterday on Better Call Saul. And I think I may have given up now on Dispatches from Elsewhere.
Oh, okay.
Which comes on afterwards. I watch like the first 10 minutes and I'm like, it's the same show every week. I mean, at this point, like, I don't know. It was interesting. It was different, but not that into it at this point in time. So we had Jan on TV yesterday.
We did.
Must see TV. And we've got all that audio for you here today as he went on NFL Live to discuss, you know, I want out, which is the theme of what he's been discussing. He's, by the way, he's allowed to want out. He
sure
can want out all he likes. He could say it is time for a new start. In his mind, it may be time for a new start. He doesn't get to choose that time or date as that specifically. He could choose not to play for the Jags, or certainly that, and that would be choosing not to make any money unless the Jags trade him off. You know, it's funny. I'm starting to sense – and I don't know if these people have any better idea of what the trade market actually will be for Jan over the next 2 weeks, any more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. But there are people out there who are starting to sense, well, as the draft gets closer, the Jags are going to have to settle. hold on now. They're saying that, you know, the Jags want a one plus more, uh-huh. right? Okay, which is their prerogative as well to put the price on what they want for the rights to sign Yannick Ngakoue. And I'm seeing people say, well, they might get a one, but the plus more will be like a third-day pick. Okay, give me a one of the four. I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, seriously, like, do you think we're sitting here in Jacksonville, FLA, thinking we're going to get two first-round picks out of this deal? No.
No.
Nobody thinks that. You know, so we understand that any team trading for Yannick Ngakoue, if that were to happen, is going to have to sign him to a big deal. So that's going to maybe temper their enthusiasm to throw massive draft capital at the problem. But who knows? I'm starting to see Seattle pop back up. You know, Schefter said the Philly's not a likely landing spot. Who knows, man? Nobody really knows. All it takes is one team saying, you know what, that's it. We're going to make a bold move, and we're going to get this done. I might take a first and a fifth. I might take a first plus anything for Yannick Ngakoue at this point. He clearly doesn't want to be here.
Yeah.
I get that. But I clearly – and I will back the Jags play if the play is we didn't get at least a first-round pick in an offer and we're going to play this out. And we'll see if he's willing to blank on $17.8 million for this year.
We'd rather franchise tag Yannick Ngakoue for 2 years.
Because we want him here, oh, by the way.
Right. We want him for the next 2 years, and we'll be getting this player. And if he chooses not to play, then he doesn't get our money.
People act like they can't tag him next year.
Right.
Even with the raise, even if he sits out, right? And this is what happened with Le'Veon Bell, right? The ruling, I think, was the next tag that gets applied is the next highest tag. You know, like every year, every time you tag a player, the value of that tag goes up, right? Like 20%, something like that. Until if you tag him a third time, that third tag becomes the average of like the top five quarterbacks, right? As opposed to just the top five players at that position. And with Le'Veon Bell, had the Jets try to tag him again, it wouldn't have reverted back to the original price because he sat out the whole year. The ruling was that counts as tagging him once, whether he signs it or not. So, okay, even with the increase, all you got to do is look at the cap space
right.
that the Jags are projected to have next year, and you can see that they can clearly go that route. Better to have Yon on a long-term deal, A. Okay?
Yeah, that seems very unlikely at this
option
point.
Option two, or B, or the second option, whatever you want to say. Maybe, I don't know, is it better to have Yon, if Yon were to show up for 2 years and play on the tag, is it better to pay him, let's say, call it $40 million over the next 2 years. All right, is it better to pay $40 million for 2 years of Yon and then lose him because you won't tag him a third time? Or is it better to get a first and a fourth-round pick for Yannick Ngakoue right now? Have that player locked up for 5 years under team control with the fifth-year option at a contract value that's probably going to be less than half of what you're paying Yon for those two seasons. You get him for 5 years. Now, the difference is the player that you would get in the first round is a totally unproven commodity. That's the beauty of Yon. What's a better option? What do you think? Is it better to have Yon if he were to agree to show up, even if he sat out training camp, signed the tag a week before the season started, but played for you for this year, did the same thing next year, then left, and then maybe you can get into, well, maybe we get a compensatory pick down the line, but that could be offset by any free agent signings you make. So is it better to have 2 years of Yon at 40, or is it better to get a first and a fourth round pick for him? What do you think? It's tough, right?
That is tough. If I knew I was getting him for all 32 games, I'd probably take Yon.
Right, because he's a bird in hand. You know what you're getting, and you're getting a high-level performer. And maybe you hope that after the first year, if things settle down and the Jags surprise in the win-loss column, because you talked yesterday about how much you want to play for a winning franchise, maybe you could revisit next offseason. Hey, here's where we're at on a long-term contract. How you feeling about it at this point in time? I don't know. But I don't think either way, I could see the advantages. Like if Philadelphia were the team and you're getting the 21st pick and a fourth rounder, you can get a really good player with the 21st pick. And you're going to have him locked up, like I said, probably for half the money you're going to spend on Yon for 2 years, you'd have him for five. It's tough call, man. Do you trust your personnel department? I think right now, Jack fans would probably say no on that one. Of course, they are the ones who brought you Yon in the third round as well, so they do have some hits. You never know. So we'll hear from Yon today. We'll hear some thoughts from Maurice Jones-Drew on what the Jags have done this offseason. He appeared on the Frangie Show yesterday. We got Johnny O coming up on the other side. I got a bevy, a cacophony, a plethora, a ton of mock drafts, a whole bunch of mock drafts coming your way today, including Daniel Jeremiah, a couple more at CBS, one at Sports Illustrated. They're all over the place right now, so we'll take a look. And still a lot of thought that the Jags may be sniffing around quarterback. But you're starting to see wide receiver pop up more at 9 now in the mock drafts,
yep,
too. So do they know anything? I have no idea if they know anything or not. We'll all find out in 2+ weeks from now. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, ET here with you. If you'd like to weigh in on today's question of the day, it is this. Is there a player you'd be willing to trade up from number 9 for, or if you'd be okay with the Jags making that kind of move? Who is that player? Now, the range of players is pretty small here, right? We're talking, I mean, if you're talking about quarterback, okay, that's your prerogative, mm-hmm, right? You can go Burrow, you can go Tua, you can go Herbert, you can go Love if you want to. You know, I don't imagine many people are going to pick the latter pair, particularly after yesterday when people are overwhelmingly saying quarterback, particularly Herbert or Love, are the ones they don't want him taking in the first round. Akuda, Jeffrey Akuda could be one of those guys. Isaiah Simmons might be one of those guys. One of the defensive tackles. Chase Young, mm-hmm, be one of those guys. A particular offensive lineman, if you like a particular one more than some of the others. That's kind of the grouping of players. Maybe even you think, hey, you know what? I'm not going to take a chance on missing out on CeeDee Lamb, right? Even though the Cardinals traded for DeAndre Hopkins, he has that collegial connection with Kyler Murray. Maybe we jump up to number 7. I don't think that's outrageous if that's your guy. But we're asking you today, just vote yes or no. Yes, if there is a player you'd be willing or okay with the Jags making a move to trade up for. No, if you're not, if you want them to stand pat at 9 at the least, and possibly even move back. But if you do vote yes, do take a moment, if you don't mind, and reply with the player. And if you have an idea of the compensation you would be willing to give, there are some that would be willing to give an awful lot to go up and get Tua based on the responses we've gotten, yep, today. Like, look, I like the idea. Like, if Akuda falls to number 7, and you can give one of those 3 fourth-round picks to make that move and secure the top player at a drastic position of need, I'm on board with that.
Yeah.
You know, I'd be all for that. So, all right, that's our question of the day. Hit us up today with your responses at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at IamE2T. Whose hat are you rocking in there today? Huh? Philadelphia Phillies?
Them right. Phillies, baby.
Oh, them Phillies, baby. Your favorite.
It's my favorite.
The Whiz Kids. You're a big fan of the 1950s Whiz Kids Phillies.
It's my favorite, man.
Back in the day. Richie Ashburn guy, I think. Dick Allen.
Yep, all of them.
He's got all those throwbacks, yeah, in his closet. That's our man, E. At IME to the T is where you'll find him on Twitter. Hit us up on the phone lines at 641-1010. Same number for the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures. Johnny O from Jaguars.com coming up on the other side. You're listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
The rap between me and Jacksonville is very simple. The organization had the opportunity to keep me long-term last offseason, and things kind of broke off. So, you know, everything happens for a reason, and not everything lasts forever. Things come to an end, and it's time for me to move on to the next chapter of my career. And I'm forever thankful for what Jacksonville has brought to me and my family, but it's time to move on.
As if speaking it could make it so, Tony. It's just time. It's time for me to move on, so I'm moving on. Oh, well, wait a minute. There's this whole little hang-up about the franchise tag. It was Unique Ngakoue on NFL Live yesterday. What happened? My feelings were hurt when they pulled the offer off the table, which, based on the market for defensive ends right now and the rumors we heard about that offer that was made to them, now we don't know about the structure of that offer.
No.
And there are ways to structure a deal that are more or less appealing to the parties involved, but seemed like a pretty fair market offer is what was on the table for him last year. I'm told, you know, that $19 million figure was more like $18 million with a chance to go to $20 million with incentives. So if you play like a top 3 defensive end, like you indicate in the interview that you are, you'll make about $20 million. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you'll make about $18 million, which is still damn good and a lot more than 2. And when you look right now, Jadeveon Clowney reportedly lowering his asking price. That's a weird deal, too. Do you see that Seattle, in the process, reportedly somewhere this offseason, offered Clowney a deal that averaged $18.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
He is said to have lowered his asking price to the $17 to $18 million range, and now reports came out in the last 24 hours that Seattle's probably out of it on Clowney. Like, what? Well, wait a minute. All these things can't add up, right? They don't add up. Anyway, so to make sense of it all.
Maybe they're in on Yon.
Maybe they are, right? But like, if you're willing to pay Clowney 18.5 and his asking price has come down below that.
Sure, doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me anyway. And maybe they are in on Jan. Let's talk with Johnny O. John Osier is the senior writer for Jaguars.com, and he joins us remotely, keeping us very safe around these parts. John, how are things at the Osier compound? Hope you guys are doing very well.
Yeah, everything's fine. There is a one day turns into the next, and everything sort of starts to look the same, which is sort of appropriate because we're talking about the Ngakoue situation.
Right, right. I mean,
and that sort of feels like, I mean, and
you're right.
I don't want to discount it because I've enjoyed covering Jan for 4 years. I really have, and I wish and hope they can get something worked out. But I'm sitting there writing about this last night. And I had to get up and walk around, and I finally said to myself, is it wrong that I'm bored with this? You know, I'm just kind of worn out on the whole concept, and I don't know that I care that much anymore. And I think a lot of fans feel the same way. It's like, come on, okay, we get it. You're not happy about it. But the rules say you really can't control the situation. I think it's tough. Maybe I'm not enunciating it very well.
No, he knows you. He knows what the rules are, John. But he's going to put it out there, like, you know, he's making these statements and he's trying to speak it into being that, hey, time has come, and he's trying to look. He's obviously he can't just decide to go play for another team. We understand the circumstances, right. But that you're right. It does make it sound like he makes it sound like the decision is his whether or not he moves on, and clearly it's not solely his. Let me ask you something I asked Tony a moment ago. Okay, these two scenarios. Scenario A, you tag Jan, he shows up about a week before the season starts, signs the deal, plays it out, you do it again next year, and then you ultimately cut him loose after 2 years. So 2 years of tagging him, he doesn't participate in the offseason, but he does play those 32 games, provided he stays healthy, and you pay him about $40 million for 2 years, right? That's scenario A. Scenario B, you get a first and a fourth round pick for Yannick Ngakoue, and, you know, obviously you're getting an unproven commodity, wherever that is. Let's say it's a pick in the 20s in the first round, and you're able to sign whoever that player is, never mind the fourth rounder, to a five-year deal that's probably going to pay him less than half of what Jan makes in those two. Jan's the proven commodity. Do you take 2 years of the sure thing at $40 million? Do you take 5 years of the less sure thing at about half the cost?
Yeah, I'm trying to sort of go through it. I would probably take the latter because it just feels like the right direction for what this franchise is doing right now, meaning all of a sudden that would give you three first-round picks this year, right? Am I reading your question right?
That's correct, yes.
And when you couple that with two next year, a couple of second-rounders, and Juwan Taylor, Josh Allen, and DJ Chark, and maybe Minshew and Miles. Now all of a sudden you've got potentially a lot of good young players, you know, and I combine Linder with, you know, you've got some stuff to build around. So I'd probably take that, but I wouldn't worry if I had to take the former, meaning this. If Jan shows up, even if he's unhappy, I don't doubt that he's going to play hard and you're going to get whatever he can give you out of it. I don't think he's going to pull a Jalen Ramsey, so to speak. So I wouldn't worry about doing your first question, but I would rather do your second.
How much of a deadline, if it is one at all, is the draft to getting a Yannick Ngakoue deal done?
Well, it's got to play into it because, you know, I do think that would probably change a little bit how you draft it. I mean, if you think you're getting them, then meaning if you think he's going to play for you, then I don't know that edge rusher is necessarily a priority. If you feel like he is not going to be there, then do you have to address in the draft? Perhaps not, because you've got Josh Allen, you've got Cassius Marsh. But I would, you know, I would think it has to get done by the draft. I'll say that, maybe change my answer next week.
All right. Well,
I would think for now, if you're going to do it, you always want to get it done by the draft because that's your last chance to really acquire significant talent usually.
Yeah, I think if it's going to happen, it's going to happen by the draft. I really do because, you know, what's, you know, they want to get an impact this year, either Jan on the field and they're willing to gamble that he shows up or get the package in return that they're looking for. And when I say looking for, they're not actively looking. I think they'd rather Jan come around, but that doesn't look like that's going to happen at this point in time. Let's move to some other material here, John. There's been a rash recently of mock drafts pairing the Jaguars with a quarterback, be it at the 9th or the 20th pick. Give us your feeling on how likely it is, depending on the scenario. Let's say, a trade up for any of the quarterbacks. How likely is that? B, how likely would they be to pull the trigger at 9 or 20, depending on who's there?
Well, I'll couch this by absolutely stressing that it's all guesswork, because the one thing Dave Caldwell is good at is not tipping his hand before the draft. So he could be planning a trade up and nobody's going to have any idea, just like the Bortles thing kind of came out of the blue. I would put it at about 10% that they're going to trade up for a guy. I just think that they like right now having the equity, meaning having the 12 picks, getting a lot of an infusion of young talent, or whatever you call it, on the roster. If a quarterback falls to them that they like at number 9 and 20, I think it's going to be very hard for them to pass it up. I have no idea what their grades are on say, a Jordan Love or a Herbert. But if it's there, I think it's tough to pass just because the position's been deficient for so long. Even whatever you feel about Minshew, there's nothing wrong with having good young quarterbacks on the roster. They just haven't had it long enough. So the percentage, I would put it less than 25. I don't think it's going to happen, but I get Ozone readers all the time saying, how in the world could you think they'd be thinking about drafting a quarterback? Well, until the position is set, you have to think about it because it's the most important position on the field, and they don't know yet if they're settled at.
What do you think the price would need to be for, I mean, the veteran options are dwindling a little bit, but for a guy like Andy Dalton, potentially, what do you think the price would need to be for the Jags to be interested in going that direction to address it?
A price in terms of pick?
Pick or pay, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, probably. I can't imagine giving up anything in the first 2 days, just off the top of my head. You would think a late, fifth-ish, fourth-ish, maybe, if they're feeling really concerned about it. Again, that sort of feels like it might happen after or during the draft once they figure out where they're going with quarterback early. I wouldn't think you'd give up very much premium, though, because, I've got Ozone questions from people saying, well, they've got to be thinking about trading some of these draft picks for players because they need veteran players. I don't see that at all. I think they like the idea of infusing this roster with young people.
Yeah, I don't see them giving anything for Andy Dalton myself with a $17 million cap hit this year. I don't know if the full cap hit would transfer, but I would bet most of it would. It's a $17 million non-guaranteed 1 year left on his deal in Cincinnati. I don't see the Jags taking on that amount of money. I could see them being interested, John, if he's let go sometime after the draft, if the Bengals do acquire Joe
That's
Burrow.
Fair.
Yeah, but I just can't see him bringing on that kind of – I don't know. I don't think they could right now. They'd be tight to get it done. So what are they doing, John, as far as you know, in terms of preparing for this virtual draft? I know the NFL is talking about doing a full mock draft, which will be interesting. I can't imagine they're actually mocking – the real players that are in this draft. Nobody's going to tip their hand on what
they're
doing.
That'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it, right? Like, hey, it leaks out. Like, Dallas leaks out a photo of their draft board every year. They leak out the results. But from what you understand, if you've gathered any of this intel, how comfortable are the Jags with the idea of remote drafting in the situation that we're in right now?
Yeah, I actually haven't because I'm not there as much. They don't. You don't actually see Dave in the hallway when you're walking by, and I haven't had a chance to talk with him yet. There's no question that football people are creatures of habit, so they want their routine, and they've been drafting the same way for years. They grow up in a system. When Dave's an intern or his first job, he's in a draft room. and you're in a draft room every year, and you set up your draft room when you're a GM like your old draft room. So you like that comfort level. But they'll have IT people at Dave's house. They'll test it. They'll have the Zooms and the cameras set up so that he can talk to Balky, he can talk to Marone, he can talk to the people. This will be set up. I think it'll come off fine. It'll be a little awkward. The reality of the draft is this. It's not like draft day where people are arguing over the pick as they're on the clock. A good draft, a well-run draft, the war room is very silent. You're looking at a board. There's three or four guys coming up on the board, and you say, hey, coming up here, we like these five guys. Okay, he's gone, he's gone, he's gone. Now we're down to two. Who do you like? Yeah, we're going with that. I don't think it's going to be near the logistical worry. I can't imagine. I mean, I saw a tweet from a national reporter yesterday saying teams are very worried about this ruining their draft. Why? Pick the players. It's a percentage game anyway. You're going to have some misses. You're going to have some hits. I just can't see a scenario where it actually ruins somebody's draft.
Do you know why, John? I think, honestly, I think they're just putting it out there as a cover your butt kind of thing. Like, if we do screw it up, we've got this to point to. I really do. I think
I do too.
Because they're all in the same boat. They drafted similar to this for decades, honestly, right? I mean, I get it. You've become a lot more advanced in your process now, but man, there's plenty of film out there to watch these guys. You've got the combine, and I get it. The medical issues, you're going to have to take some chances on guys. And I think people are going to be somewhat more understanding. I do think you'll see some guys slide because of the medical questions around them. And, you know, so there are going to be mistakes that are made, absolutely. But I do think
– mistakes every year.
Right. But I think they're setting up, as McManus calls it, a trap door, you know, to escape through – just in case things go wrong. Well, we told you it was going to be so difficult drafting from home. So,
I think the biggest thing is not necessarily the communication with the league, meaning, you know, you can get your pick in very easily, and I'm sure there will be – I can't imagine there won't be some contingency put in to allow for, you know, hey, if you're 20 seconds late with the pick, because of this new system, we're not going to penalize as quickly if you miss the actual deadline. The biggest issue, I'm sure, will be communication within staff, meaning making sure you can talk to the scout who drafted this guy, talk to the doctor. I'm sure they will do so many Zoom conference run-throughs that will seem seamless by draft night, and they will be very comfortable with how they're communicating. And that's the biggest difference is, can you get that piece of information quickly? Can you get a guy? Well, everybody will be ready. Everybody will be ready to communicate with Dave. And when it comes to the final decision, Dave, which is it's his job, he realizes it, will be the guy pulling the trigger at the end.
Yeah. Look, I think we'll all be glad when he gets here in 2 weeks. But I will say this. I'm glad whether it's Jan speaking on NFL Live or the draft going on, the NFL offseason has moved along as close to normal as it could under the circumstances. And from our selfish point of view, I'm glad that it has. So let's just leave it at that. John, hey, be safe. Hunker down. I will look forward to catching up with you next Wednesday and continue to read your work in the Ozone and everything else at Jaguars.com. Thanks for the time this morning.
All right, you guys as well. Everybody stay safe. Thank you.
All right, buddy. There you go. Senior writer for Jaguars.com, Mr. Johnny Osier. Right there. So we'll come back. We'll hear a little bit more from what Jan said on NFL Live yesterday. We'll get into some of the MJD audio from the Frangie show as we go along as well. If you want to weigh in on anything Jaguar NFL related, 641-1010 on the phone lines and the text line as well, designed by Lifetime Enclosures, or hit us up on Twitter. Today's question of the day, is there a player you'd be willing or okay with the Jaguars trading up for in the draft? If yes, who is that player and what would you be willing to pay? If no, and just no, that's fine. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, ET, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Shot through the heart, and you're to blame,
darling. You give love a bad name. Everything you need to know about the Jags, Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Woo-hoo! All right, happy hump day, everybody. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, ET, Jaguars Today. A couple quick ones on the text line. here, Tony. We're talking about Clowney and how it doesn't make sense that they would offer him $18 million and he'd lower that asking price to $17 to $18, then they'd be out on him. Someone replied, it makes perfect sense. Seahawks don't want Clowney, and I don't blame them, which flies in the face of them offering him $18.5 million.
Yeah, they made the offer.
They made the offer. So clearly they wanted him. What changed from they made the offer, maybe they just don't want to wait around. That's what the reporting was yesterday. They're tired of waiting for him to decide and trying to squeeze every penny out of the situation. That's his right. He's entitled to handle it any way he wants. They're like, look, we can't. We're 2 weeks out from the draft here, man. We've made you a strong offer. You haven't taken it. That's it. That's it. That's why it doesn't make any sense to me. If they're going to offer him 18.5, unless that report is completely inaccurate, and then his asking price gets lowered to 17 to 18, less than what they offered him, why then have they lost interest in him? If you can't understand why that doesn't connect, I can't help you.
Right.
Here's another one. Even thinking about keeping Jan in our building is utterly ridiculous. I understand that sentiment if you've got a disgruntled player, but okay, utterly ridiculous. What if your option is the best offer we have is a fourth-round pick for Yannick Ngakoue? Take him off your hands for a fourth-round pick. Which is more utterly ridiculous.
Yeah.
I will hold on and hope that he comes to his senses and plays for $17.8 million because as of right now, I don't think he's going to be a fake back injury guy. I hope he isn't. You know, he's handled a lot of this other stuff very vocally, a la Jalen looking to get out, but that doesn't mean he would go to that depth of, you know, kind of a low move. So, I know this. The Jags, I believe this strongly, and I've been told this, that they're not selling him for less than they think he's worth.
Yeah.
And unless they've changed their valuation on him, that means more than a first-round pick coming down the line.
Yep.
So, we shall see. Somebody else asked, somebody brought up he could sign the tag, but backs usually stay hurting after about six games. I guess, you know, I don't know if that's phrased the right way, but I know what their point is. He could sign the tag and then collect his money and be, oh, I can't play because I'm hurt and all this stuff. I don't know. I mean, is that a risk? You can run that risk with any player, though, right? Jan's never exhibited that kind of thing before. What else here? There was another one. It said, you know, would Jan get the full amount of his money if he, let's say, sat out eight games? No. Your pay during the season, unless it's otherwise specified in your contract, is broken up into 17 weekly installments.
Yep.
Right? You're paid every week. And so if you hold out 8 weeks, you're going to lose about half of your money. And they said, well, he could show up then and play for 10. Yeah, he could and sit out half the year. But if you're going to do that, if you're willing to play half the year, why wouldn't you just show up and get $17.8 million? You can get hurt in those last 10 games. Maybe, you know, the odds are greater you can get hurt if you play the full season, but you're walking away from a million plus per week. That's tough, man. I don't know. I think that's why they think they're still willing to keep the franchise tag on him. They think he'll blink. It's way more money. He'll make as much in a couple, 3 weeks as he's made in 4 years if he goes the route of just showing up. Just sign it on the eve of the season, show up, pass your physical, go out there and play and collect your money.
Yeah, and look, I don't think it's impossible that he would go that direction with it. Look, $10 million
sold him out half the year?
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's impossible.
Is still $10 million.
Sure.
And I think if they don't get him traded, he's going to show up at some point this year to play football. And I think it'll be earlier than halfway through the season. But look, Jan's going to make whatever decision Jan's going to make when it comes to that. And we'll see what happens over the course of the next couple weeks. Because it does feel like it's not a hard deadline, but it does feel like a soft one coming with the draft. Because if you're going to get compensation for Jan that's going to help you now, you need it before the NFL draft or on draft night. To make that kind of thing happen. Otherwise, you're waiting another year to see what's going to. If you traded him after that before the season, you're waiting a year to get whatever you're going to get. So you're getting nothing out of it for a year, which makes the kind of deadline of the draft feel like it's a real thing. If they are going to trade Yannick Ngakoue, it's Jan's handled it the way he has for the last several months. The team still wants to have a long-term deal in place with Yannick Ngakoue. He's unwilling to do that to this point, and it seems like he's pretty steadfast in that. So it's going to be worked out some other way, likely with a trade, and if that's going to happen, you would think that's going to move in the next week and a half.
One more, and we'll get to Jan's cuts, yesterday's comments on NFL Live. It says here, I just had it right in front of me, Mike. Anytime it starts that, you know they're coming at me. At this point, just seek counseling to get over the jail and living rent-free in your head, man. Sheesh, the man is gone. Well, we brought him up in the context of how it could play out. We've got second year in a row, a high-profile player on this team, disgruntled, clearly wants out. If you don't think we'll bring up the example of the guy from a year ago, I would say maybe Jalen needs to go see a proctologist to get your head removed from his colon. If it's that far up there that you are bothered by a critique of a guy who quit on the football team. So,
if you're waiting on
send me your text number and I'll send that to you directly.
If you're waiting on Mike or I to stop calling Jalen a quitter, you're going to be waiting until I'm dead.
Yeah. Until I'm off the air.
He quit.
He quit on the team, and he'll be forever known as the guy who quit on the team. In my, who quit.
Yep.
He's a quitter. Period. So if that's living rent-free in my head, or if that's just maybe, acknowledging reality.
And it's not irrelevant to the conversation about what's going on with Jan, and I choose every time Jalen gets brought up to mention that he quit. And I will continue to do that.
In the day where wipes are such a hot commodity, I would not be placing my head in a place where it didn't belong, because it seems wasteful at this point in time.
It is a little bit. It's disrespectful.
It's very disrespectful to the people at the Purell factory and others. The Clorox wipes people probably think they have better uses.
Yeah,
of
that's
their
probably
product.
Not on the can.
That seems like a choice by you. That's an elective. That wasn't a compulsory thing you had to do. All right, here's Jan yesterday. He said, his time has come. He's had enough. It's time to part ways. Mm-hmm. Here's a type of team Yannick Ngakoue wants to play for.
Well, I'm not really sure what team I will be landing at, but what type of team that I would love to join is a team that has great culture. I really want to be a part of a team that has great culture, and winning is a habit. I don't want to be part of a team where losing is a norm or anything of that nature. I want to be part of something special. Also, I just want to go to a place where the community, I can make a great impact in the community and just reach out to younger people that look up to me.
All right, here I will say this. If Jan's point is that the ownership of this team should have blown out the front office and the coaching staff because we've been losing, we haven't been getting the job done, they were not held accountable, and we're going back to the well with the same leadership group, I can understand that.
Absolutely.
If that is the point he's making. I don't know. Like, you were part of that locker room culture, okay? You didn't accept losing, right? Are there people that are just – I don't know this, Tony. Are there Jaguars in the last 2 years that have just been showing up kind of laughing like, who cares? I'm getting paid, Maybe.
Maybe.
Right? Was it that prevalent when you say – was it a losing culture in 2017? Or did you just have enough talent to win that year? Have you not been part of this culture for the last couple of years? Are you supposed to be one of the better players on this football team – and the Jags still only manage 11 wins, so how much of that is your responsibility? I'm not saying it's all him.
No.
He's played well for the football team. I want him here. But
absolutely, yeah.
I'm curious as to whether or not he feels that ownership has not shown a commitment to winning.
I wonder how many, if you took a look at it over, I don't even know what time period you'd have to do, how many teams would even fit that criteria where it's a winning team with a good culture, whatever the heck that means, beyond they win. I don't know what it means beyond they win, good culture. But I wonder how many teams in the NFL have had a winning record for each of the last 3 years. I bet the number's really small.
So let's say if the Patriots don't make the playoffs this year, is it because the culture changed or they lost Tom Brady?
I would argue
Jared Stidham.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's
– the culture changed that they didn't win as much. Right, like every time someone mentions culture, I'm like, are they winning or are they losing? Like, that's culture to me in the National Football or any professional sport. And we've seen some teams. We saw Philadelphia with a bunch of guys that were trash talking and doing all that kind of stuff. That you could call that a bad culture from a certain perspective. They won the Super Bowl. It's a good culture. If you win the Super Bowl, good enough to win at the absolute highest level. I do wonder, like, how many teams would even qualify under that, and I bet the number would be around 5 or 6, maybe.
Let's play cut 3 here. This is Jan's message to NFL teams who may be interested in acquiring him.
The first thing I have to say to any 31 team, other teams that would like to take me during a draft, I bring just a different presence in the locker room, not just on the field. You can reach out to anybody that's ever played with me in Jacksonville. The kind of intensity and aggressiveness I bring is different. In my opinion, I'm a top 5 defensive end in this league, top 3. My play hasn't been able to be seen like that, playing in Jacksonville, not having too many primetime games. So, you know, if I end up landing on a team that's primetime, hopefully I can show the world what I can do completely.
Yeah, I don't think the people who evaluate, you know, the NFL, like at Pro Football Focus, only grade the primetime games. I really don't, right. You know, and oh, by the way, you just told on yourself there. When you say the other 31 teams, so you're saying they all have a winning culture? Every one of those teams is a winning culture? Or you just really want out of Jacksonville? Is that what it is? And you're using the culture as your latest excuse, right? And that, granted, that's your prerogative,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to listen to what you're actually saying there. And when you say that you want to go to a team with a winning culture, and then you say, I'm going to send a message to the other 31 teams who may want to acquire me. Okay, here's what you're getting. So you're telling me the Bengals have a winning culture, who just, and all those teams that were worse than Jacksonville last year, I guess, have a winning culture, right? And they all do. And Jacksonville's the only one without one. Now we've cleared that up. And finally, he said he feels he's a top 5, maybe a top 3 defensive end. What qualifies him to be that?
Getting sacks is a thing that people always harp on, getting sacks, but it's not about always getting sacks. It's about getting the ball out. And for a player that's on the defensive side of the ball to be able to get the ball out, it's basically making him an offensive player. And I look at myself as an offensive guy because when our offenses, any offense I've played with, when they're in detrimental situations, they look at me to get the ball back. And if I can get the ball back for them, it just gives them another opportunity to be able to win the game for us. So that's another trait that I will bring to a new team is getting the ball out. And who doesn't love a forced fumble?
Hey, look, I do. We all do. 14 Absolutely. Of them in his career. He's been excellent in that category. And look, by the way, if I'm Jan, I may call myself the best defensive end in the league, right? You're trying to get paid. You got to you know, believe that you're worth that money. I don't have a problem with him putting himself in that category. You know, reasonably people can debate, though, whether he truly belongs there. And it's not due to a lack of primetime games one way or the other. It's,
no.
You know, do you make as big an impact against the run? Are your sack numbers as gaudy as some of these other players and things of that ilk?
Yeah, look, I don't have a problem with players wanting to get paid and playing whatever cards they feel like they need to get paid. It doesn't mean that I have to like the cards they're playing or agree with them necessarily. Look, Jan, I don't think it's going to get paid what he has wanted to get paid this entire time, and I think the market for defensive ends has borne that out to this point in this offseason. I think we're going to look back at whatever offer was made to him, and it'll turn out to be pretty fair, and that the ultimate thing here was Jan didn't want to be in Jacksonville anymore. That's okay for Jan to feel that way. That doesn't mean I have to be cool with him feeling that way. He doesn't want to be in Jacksonville anymore. I don't like that as someone who covers the Jacksonville Jaguars.
How dare you?
Right. So, yeah. Look, we'll see how it all plays out.
We'll come back with this Dayton football, the drive around the NFL. We'll dig into mock draft mania a little bit in hour number 2 as well, including the latest offering from NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, ET, Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Time to learn
and now,
something.
This date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, April 8th throughout the years. In 1966, the American Football League, the AFL, chose 36-year-old Al Davis to be their commissioner on this date way back when, 54 years ago. Famous birthdays NFL-wise on this date. Well, we go back to 1910. George Musso, NFL guard with the Bears for 12 seasons, a 3-time Pro Bowler. He won 4 NFL championships and was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1982. Musso lived to be 90 years old, passing away in the year 2000, would be 110 years old today. Don Davey played for the Jaguars for 3 seasons, beginning in 1995, had 6.5 sacks as a defensive tackle in that span. He was born in this date in 1968, 42 games with the Jags, including 38 starts for the team in that 3-year period. Happy birthday to Don Davey. Likewise, happy birthday to a couple of local high school products. Lito Shepherd Born on this date. Went to Reigns High School. Born on this date in 1981. Lito's 39. Today was the 26th pick in the 2002 NFL Draft. 10 years in the National Football League. He made a couple of Pro Bowls and tallied 19 interceptions. That's not an unimpressive total.
Sure.
Right there. And brother Cliff.
What up, dog?
Cliff Averill, Clay High School's finest, 34 years young today. Made one Pro Bowl in his career. That came in 2016. 74 career sacks.
One
for
sack away
Clay
from
High
75.
School's Averill. Yes, he was two away from 76, from what I understand as well. So he was right there in the ballpark of some very impressive numbers. But 74 is pretty good. Happy birthday to ET's bro, Cliff Averill. That's what we got for you on this date in football history.
Now, the drive around the NFL on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Washington head coach Ron Rivera told SI that with the uncertainty surrounding when teams will be able to get back on the practice field, that if the prep time was shortened dramatically, that it could give Kyle Allen a leg up on Dwayne Haskins.
Dwayne Haskins got to be like, damn, the quarterback. I need a team with a better culture than this.
The right quotes now. From Rivera, if that was the situation, Kyle would have a leg up on the situation, most certainly. If we were told, hey, you've got 2 weeks to go, I would feel very comfortable with Kyle because here's a guy who knows the system, has been in the system, and could handle it for us for a period of time, and we'll see how that goes.
We talked about it yesterday, Tony. The first month of the season could be very interesting with really shortened preparation time, the teams that have some kind of continuity. And even though they've got a new staff, they got a guy who knows how to run their offense coming in that could help get you off to a better start.
Sure, if it takes 2 weeks for the run game to really get going in the league during a normal preseason into the regular season, whew, what it could look like this year. The league will be running its own mock draft this year as well. There will be a full run through of the process for a virtual draft to try and work out as many hiccups as possible before the real thing in 15 days. The league has said that there will be no allowances for technical difficulties, basically telling teams to deal with it and use the resources the league is going to give them, which they should have a better understanding of after their walkthrough. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers unveiled new uniforms yesterday with the look coming that comes with a looks a lot like their uniform from the 2000s. The pewter alternative seemed to get people's attention. The Atlanta Falcons also unveiled new uniforms this morning with not near as much fanfare, probably because Tom Brady is not going to be wearing new Falcons duds, but he will be for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
I think there's kind of subtle differences. I think I like the Bucs unis. I don't love the ATL above the numbers on the front of the Falcons jerseys. Most of the alternatives have it, but
yeah,
whatever,
I saw
man.
Doom pointed out too. It's like, I thought red was their primary color, and like one of those schemes had a jersey that had red in it. Like
just one?
Yeah, of the four. And that was one that like faded with the black. But I was like, yeah.
Oh, you got the white with the little red highlights on the numbers.
Yeah,
they got accents. The one is primarily red. Then you got the black with the red stripe and the red ATL. They all have some red in them, right? But teams, the players love black unis, right?
They do.
I mean, they players just love the all-black look.
Fans do, too.
Black on white. A lot of them do. So two of those jerseys are predominantly black. And one of them has like red trim around the numerals, and the other has the red ATL above the number in front, which I don't particularly like. But most of their three out of the four options have that ATL on there. So
yeah,
whatever, man. I mean, in the end,
who cares?
Right, unless it's absolutely hideous.
Yeah,
unless it's like actually the guys who call the games on TV. As long as you don't take away from my enjoyment of the game, I don't care that much, right? There are not many that add to it. Like, I like Romo. He does add something to it.
Yeah.
I think Collinsworth adds something to it.
How would you feel about the story that came out a couple days ago with Fowler and Herbstreit?
No.
ESPN
oh,
looking
no.
at him
no,
from
no,
Monday
no,
Night Football.
No, sorry you guys don't have anything to do this fall, but go call your own sport. Sorry if it's being played or not played, and college football is a different sport than
would pro
football.
Would you prefer that or to be able to look forward to whatever lunacy Booger's going to say?
Give me the lunacy. Okay. I don't need these. Hey, look, you guys go call your own game. You don't have a game to call. I don't need Kirk Herbstreit calling National Football League games. I don't feel like he's an authority on the National Football League. I just don't. So
that's because he's not.
That's probably why I feel that way.
He's an authority on college football for
no
sure.
No question. And by all accounts, does a really good job calling college football.
Yeah.
You can argue he's biased against this team. Everyone thinks some announcer is biased against somebody.
Sure.
So that doesn't get me all that worked up. By the way, the poll closed from yesterday. We did like the bonus in-season or in-show poll, in-season, mid-season poll. We asked, do you think Calais Campbell deserves induction into the pride of the Jaguars when his career is over? Over 500 of you voted on that one, and it came out 60-40, right on the button. No little decimals to go. 60-40, yes. Do believe he deserves induction. Tony and I have both voted no. As of right now, Tony said if he gets in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, it would change his vote. And look,
yep,
I voted no, but it's not one of those that I'll spend a moment worrying about or lose an ounce of sleep over Calais Campbell if they decide to put him in the pride of the Jaguars somewhere down the line.
Yeah.
Good for Calais, man. I mean, Calais is a guy in good stead with this organization and the fan base, no question about it. All right, we'll come back on the other side. We'll get into some of these mock drafts, including Daniel Jeremiah's latest offering at NFL.com. Couple new ones on CBS, one at Sports Illustrated. We'll just touch on what the Jags, they have them up to in these latter days. Now, 2 weeks and one day before the first round of the NFL draft, with no redos for technology lapses whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Have a list, have a hard copy, have a phone that's charged up, and hopefully your cell tower's working. That's your backup plan.
I mean, they said they're going to have like a conference call that's going to be open for the entirety of it for all 32 teams. So I'm guessing they're having some kind of hardwired phone line put in where you hit a button, and it's like, I'm talking to the league right now, right? Like, our pick is X. You know, so they're at least putting that kind of backdoor into it. I'm looking forward to the stories of someone leaving that line open.
Like we've seen in the past, on a rare occasion, teams have not gotten their pick in on time, right? And the other teams rush them up. The whole Leftwich situation that kind of happened, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do you do? Can you break it on the line like at 10 minutes and 1 second? Hey, Raj.
Three guys screaming.
Raj. No. It's our turn.
Jeff Okuda.
Just give us Okuda. All right, we will come back.
Jacksonville Jeff Okuda.
Yeah, just keep screaming that. I'd be okay. All right, we will come back, and we will get into some of those mocks on the other side. Jaguars Today rolls on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
All Jags, all NFL. Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We will dig into mock draft madness coming up momentarily. I know you can't wait. I know you're not tired of the four or five new ones that come out every day. I mean, look, these sites are smart, Tony. I mean, what else? We don't have a lot to talk about in the sports world anyway. It's a heavy mock draft season, but it does seem like they're pumping them out at a much quicker rate than they have in years past.
Oh, sure, yeah.
At least it seems that way to me, right? SI's up to their 13th among all their guys. I mean, CBS says, hold my beer. Like, each guy on there has done, like, six of them, and they're, like, 12 guys at CBS doing these things. So there have been a lot of permutations about what might happen. Now, if you've noticed over the last couple weeks, things have changed around these parts. And when I say these parts, I mean planet Earth, okay? Everything's gotten a little bit different. Jacksonville, FLA is certainly no different than anybody else, adjusting to some stay-at-home restrictions, trying to socially distance ourselves as smartly as we can to flatten the curve of the COVID-19 pandemic. And with that, we've been trying to highlight some of our local sponsors, local businesses that are making that adjustment and trying to get that message out to you. And we welcome Daniel Medine, who's a branch manager here in Jacksonville with Metro Rooter, a fine plumbing service that has sponsored this network here, 1010XL, for quite a long time. Daniel, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. First off, we'd like to ask, hopefully you personally, those close to you, those you know, everybody's staying healthy right now. That's job one. Is that the case?
Absolutely. Blessed that myself, my family, my employees, their families, everyone's healthy.
Oh, we all are, man. And that obviously, you know, my mom used to tell me, Daniel, when I was a kid, you know, if you got your health, you got everything. And I was thinking, I could go over $10 million with that, mom. But I get her point. I do. So tell us, you know, what kind of adjustments has Metro Rooter had to make in this environment? Because, like, quite frankly, Daniel, if you've got a plumbing issue at your house, man, it's not going to wait for the pandemic to clear up. You're going to need to get that addressed.
Absolutely. We need to keep life flowing for our customers, especially when everyone's holed up in the house, whether it's plumbing or septic or whatever. But we've had to make a lot of adjustments, but we're lucky to be such a critical and essential business that all my people are are still employed. We're still out there working hard. We're maintaining our 6 foot distance, all the things that y'all just talked about, and Tony mentioned on his commercial there. Is, we're following all the warnings, the distancing. We're using PPE is wherever necessary. So I have to credit my leadership team. We've got our hands on very difficult to find supplies so that we keep our techs protected out in the field, and also keep our customers protected who have to interact with our techs out there.
No doubt. Now, for your customers right now, are you offering any kind of, you know, are you going more towards consulting a little more in depth before you show up? You're trying to diagnose problems? I mean, are there things you're trying to do to mitigate the amount of time you spend on property right now to keep that social contact down as much as possible?
That's a great question. And yes, we are trying to get more information, more detail, so we minimize that interaction once we get out there. And we've just changed protocol and procedures when we get out there. We don't hand over tablets for signatures. Folks leave checks, you know, stuck to their window. We grab the check. And so really anything we can do to minimize interaction, we've done it. We've changed different procedures here at the office. We minimize all sorts of foot traffic between vendors and delivery guys, and So just trying to maintain our 6 foot distance and just cut out any type of interaction that isn't absolutely critical during this time. And one of those things is taking a lot of pictures. So where we pump a grease trap or a septic tank, where we used to have to get signatures, we take a lot more pictures just to then email the client and let them know we did take care of what you needed us to do, and here's some justification for what we did for you.
Gotcha. And obviously you guys do great work. I've had you out to my house when I've had issues for residential plumbing needs. You do a lot of business stuff as well, when it comes to waste disposal, grease trap, and tank servicing, and things like that. So you guys really, there's no outfit that would have plumbing needs that Metro Rooter could not address here in Jacksonville.
Absolutely. Whether it's commercial or residential, we're still very busy on both fronts. You know, the grease pumping has gone down with a lot of the restaurants, unfortunately, being closed down.
Yeah.
But everything else is, we're still very busy. So and right around the corner, those restaurants will be open back up, and we'll be ready to take care of them and clear up that grease one.
All right. You guys recently got under the umbrella of Wind River Environmental, too, I see on your website. Has that been a pretty big deal for you guys?
Yes, it's been great. It's been a great partnership. We've been with them for about 2 years now, but we're very well known as Metro Rooter. So we're slowly kind of co-branding Wind River into that.
Gotcha.
But we have such a history, 40 years here in the market as Metro Rooter. So that's what everyone still knows us by. But we are Metro Rooter, a Wind River company.
Gotcha. And if folks need your services, 904-695-1911. Is the best way. What's the best web address to direct people to, Daniel?
You can go to metrorooter.com or windriverenvironmental.com. Either one will take you to that same place. So whatever you're familiar with, you can use that name to find us on the web.
All right. metrorooter.com is a great jumping off point. 904-695-1911. I always say they hope you don't have those kind of issues, but they know they're going to happen. Trust me, if you need somebody to come out and take care of your plumbing issues at your house, you can trust Metro Rooter. I've done it at my place many times over the years when I've had issues, and they've always been out there quick and with the right service and very accountable. Daniel Medine with Metro Rooter. Daniel, we appreciate it, man. Keep going strong. Keep everybody safe over there with Metro Rooter. We appreciate what you bring to the community and certainly here on 1010XL, and we're wishing you all the best in these times.
Our pleasure, gentlemen. Thanks for the opportunity.
You got it, buddy. Daniel Medine, one of the branch managers here locally with Metro Rooter. So, again, highlighting some of the local businesses out there trying to keep, the local economy pumping along as much as we possibly can.
No doubt.
Tony Smith. All right, let's get to Styx Jeremiah, probably the most high profile of the mock drafters we'll take a peek at today. And from what I can tell, he's not projecting any trades in this first round mock draft that he put out there today. It's his third offering. He's got Burrow first, Chase Young, Jeff Okuda of the Lions. A lot of, the usual suspects you see. Tristan Wirfs out of Iowa going to the Giants. And that's kind of the thing. Who is the Giants? Who's the apple of their eye in the offensive line group? Don't really know. But a lot of people mocking offensive line there. Justin Herbert going to the Dolphins. And the way he put it, he says he has Tua rated higher than Herbert, but he thinks there's a legit chance that Herbert goes ahead of Tua in this deal. Particularly, you're hearing that the Dolphins have liked Herbert for a couple of years. Doesn't mean they don't like Tua. It's just, you know, how comfortable are you pulling the trigger on a major acquisition
sure.
when you can't vet the medicals the way you'd like to? The Chargers are fine with it because they took him at six, one pick later. Derrick Brown off the board there at seven, Tony. And Jedrick Wills, the offensive lineman out of Bama, going to the Arizona Cardinals. So the Jaguars select Mekhi Becton in this scenario. I'd be okay with that.
Yep.
He's a mountain of a man. The Jags have multiple needs on defense, but this pick, says Jeremiah, helps him upgrade two spots. Becton takes over at left tackle, and Cam Robinson slides inside to guard. Do we know Cam would be an upgraded guard? I don't know. I mean, in theory, right, he would add him to the competition, but I don't think they're paying Andrew Norwell what they're paying him to have him sit on the bench, right?
So probably not.
I imagine Norwell's probably going to be starting this year. Could he beat out A.J. Cann? I think, you know, give him a chance to find out. I look, draft Becton. Becton's got to come in and show you that he's ready to take over from Cam at left tackle as well. So,
and how much opportunity will there be to do that?
I don't know. You know, that's the thing, right? If you draft a guy at nine, are you just presuming, hey, we're going to plug this guy in regardless? It's such an unknown landscape. Yeah.
It feels like he'll get plugged in somewhere, you know, because he is a top 10 pick. It would be, I mean, the questions about where that would be, we would discuss for weeks and months, and hopefully they'll be on a field somewhere in as early as July, but really there's no telling at this point.
No. All right, so from there, here's 10 through 19 to let you know who's coming off the board. Browns go Isaiah Simmons. CeeDee Lamb to the Jets, first receiver on a three-receiver run. Jerry Jeudy goes next to the Raiders. Henry Ruggs to San Francisco. Andrew Thomas, who a lot of people love at the offensive tackle spot, goes to the Bucks at 14. Javon Kinlaw goes 15th to Denver. C.J. Henderson then to the Falcons. Kalavon Chasen, the edge rusher from LSU, goes to the Cowboys. Yetur Gross-Matos, the edge rusher at Penn State, goes to Miami. A.J. Terrell, the Raiders take the Clemson cornerback, leaving the Jags to take Justin Jefferson. Haven't seen this pairing before here. So they go offense in this one. They get some protection from Minshew, and then they get another weapon. He says Jefferson has outstanding hands and route polish. He excels on third down and in the red zone. I'm just not at for me, as it stands right now, with the depth at wide receiver, not a 20 for me. I'd rather right there, I'd take Trayvon Diggs at cornerback over Justin Jefferson. He doesn't have Diggs going in the first round at all in this scenario. So it'd be great if you could get him at 42, but given a choice at 20, I'd probably rather go corner than Justin Jefferson. What do you think?
Maybe, again, like I don't evaluate these guys that way. It'd be more looking just at the position and saying I'd rather them address corner than address wide receiver, given the depth of the wide receiver draft class. But it goes, I think the argument for me is similar to the one with why take Jerry Jeudy at 9. Right? Like, if you feel like you're getting a special talent at that position as opposed to this is a really good corner, if you feel like you're getting a more special player, look, I have no issue with their needs all over the place if they are just taking the best player available to them when they're on the board at 20. And if that's a wide receiver, you can sell me on that pretty easily. It makes more sense to me for it to be a corner for what they need compared to, you know, what they wide receiver and corner, but that doesn't mean that I think the wide receiver isn't the better player available to him there at 20, and they can still get a pretty good corner at 42, they would feel like, I assume. So I'd be all right with it. I'd probably prefer the other way, though.
Let's see here. I'm trying to keep up with what draft I have open in front of me. There's so many of them here. Okay, the two that I wanted to look at from the last 24 hours at CBS, just quickly what the Jags did here in these projections. R.J. White, one of the top draft guys with CBS, put this one out yesterday. And he had the Jags taking Derrick Brown with the 9th pick. It says the Jags are in a good spot to address one of their many needs with this pick. I wonder if their direction at 9 will be reflected by who they expect to be available at number 20. Brown helps replenish the defensive line during an offseason of rebuilding. I do think you have to factor it in to some degree. What combination would be best? Interestingly, in this one, the Patriots move up to 17 and take Justin Herbert, who was sliding a little bit there. The Jaguars ultimately miss out on Jerry Jeudy by a selection and take Xavier McKinney, the safety out of Alabama. So you get Auburn, Alabama back-to-back in the first round. So the Jags can go virtually best player available with both of their round one picks, considering all their needs as they rebuild. And here they get a versatile defensive back to build the secondary around. So that's one projection. The other one comes from Jared Dubin, and he goes with Justin Herbert at 9 for the Jags. The thing's all over the place now, right?
Yep.
The either the quarterback thing or just the wide varieties of different opinions, as you can hear in this. It says if the Jags were really sold – this is kind of contradictory. If the Jags were really sold on Minshew, they wouldn't have given the job back to Nick Foles last season. Then they say, well, just because Foles was sent packing doesn't mean they aren't still looking for their long-term answer here. So they weren't sold on Minshew because they gave the job back to a guy who they paid $88 million to like 6 months prior – and then they got rid of that guy, and it's an indication. I don't know.
Sure.
Anyway, Herbert is the guy, because I think people are having a hard time figuring out what they're going to do. And then in this one, though, you get Javon Kinlaw with the second selection.
There we go.
Would you prefer Herbert Kinlaw to Brown McKinney?
No, I'd prefer Brown McKinney.
Would you? I don't.
I would.
Boy, I'm not sure.
Like,
if
I don't
I'm
think
sold on McKinney.
You know, like, I'm not. Safety is fine. If they address safety, that's fine. I don't think that's a premium position for them with what they have available on the roster. So if they feel like they can upgrade there, that's fine. Herbert scares me. Like Herbert and Love.
Would you rather though? If forget where you had to take him. Let's say it's the 20th pick, right? Because either way it works out, you get one of the top defensive tackles in
yep.
this scenario. So at the 20th pick, if you have a chance to take Herbert or McKinney, you'd rather have McKinney at that point?
I'd rather have McKinney.
At that point, I don't think Herbert makes it to 20, by the way. But if he did, I could see why they said, well, the upside is potentially too great.
Sure. I can understand the argument for going that direction. Like, I don't think Gardner Minshew is sacred. Right? Like, the quarterback position is untouchable. I don't love Herbert or Love as a quarterback prospect personally, so I would rather see them go another direction if it comes down to that. But I would understand if they feel like he is a guy that can be a franchise guy, pull the trigger on that. Totally get it. Like, there's never a bad reason to pull the trigger on a franchise guy when you don't have one, and they don't have one guaranteed, certainly in Gardner Minshew.
One more quick one here. Connor Orr put out Sports Illustrated's 13th mock draft of the silly season.
Okie dokie.
Had Jerry Jeudy to the Jags at 9.
Okay.
Said Doug Marrone made one smart move this offseason, calling Jay Gruden and asking him to become his offensive coordinator. The next step is getting Gruden and Gardner Minshew someone to throw to. I think the value skews a bit towards the offensive line here, though the Jags are actually fairly well-stocked in that department. Says Connor Orr. Jeudy looks every bit the star on tape and can be moved anywhere within the offense to manipulate defense. Are they stocked on offense? The Jags say it's a strength of the team. Others think it's a humongous need. And then they go with Trevon Diggs, the corner out of Alabama with the 20th selection after losing both Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Boye in cap-saving measures. Is that what we called it? The Jaguars would like to come out of the first round with another high upside talent under cost control for the next 4 years. Diggs is aggressive, has great size, and tracks the ball well on deep throws. So there's a comment. You're hitting on Diggs at 20. I don't mind that so much.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I wouldn't hate Jeudy at 9. I'd prefer a big guy, I think.
Yeah.
But I might prefer that combo. Although the Brown-McKinney combo might be the best. I don't know. Jeudy and Trevon Diggs, I could argue that one around for a while. So anyway, mock draft season is deep within the throes of all the different permutations people are putting out there. You can find a half dozen new ones every single day. We'll highlight some of them here on Jaguars Today. Coming back, we'll take a look at the question of the day, which asks, is there a player that you'd be okay with the Jags making a move to go up and get? And if so, what's the price you'd be willing to add to the 9th overall pick to make that move? And who is that player? We'll take a look at some of your responses coming up next. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, here's my 1010 take brought to you by Hatfield and Hatfield Attorneys at Law. Tony, I'd prefer the Jags not trade up for anybody. But if Jeffrey Okuda could be had, like, on a I don't see the Jags making a move from 9 to 3. I don't think they're going to make that sweeping a move for a cornerback when they've got all this draft capital. I don't think they acquired all this capital just to package a ton of it together and get a guy who, you know, maybe falls to you at 9, but I'm talking about if he gets in that range at 7 for whatever reason. Funny things happen at the top. Teams are trading up for, you know, whatever. Let's say Washington takes Tua, right? And then all of a sudden Detroit goes, oh, we got to have Chase Young here, right? And maybe they go in a different direction. And then Miami goes Herbert, and who knows, the Chargers go offensive line, Giants go offensive line. Maybe Okuda's sitting there at 7. If I can make a couple of spot move for a corner, give up one of those fourth-round picks, yeah, I'd do something like that. I wouldn't go crazy. I asked you this on the break. I assume you like Tua better than Herbert, right?
Yes.
If it were going to come down to a quarterback. And we're not suggesting the Jags are absolutely drafting a quarterback, but which scenario would you rather do? Would you rather give Yannick Ngakoue the rights to him, the 9th pick, because that's where you're moving up from, and let's say a third rounder. So the compensation is Yon and a third rounder to move up to get Tua. Let's say to move up to Detroit spot and get Tua. Or would you rather just them take Herbert there at 9, still have the rights to Yon, and still have their third round pick?
If given that choice, I'd go Tua. Because
you believe in Tua more.
I believe in Tua more.
Yeah.
And that's the most important piece in this whole thing, is if you can land the quarterback.
It is. I don't know if I believe in him.
I don't love either of those deals.
I don't either, but I'm asking you, yeah, right, to choose between
but
two.
But if I had to choose
him,
I would choose Tua.
Right. And now, part of the equation is, too, what do you really expect to be able to get for Yon? If you think you can get a first and a third for Yon, basically then what you're saying is, you give up the 9th pick plus another first-rounder plus 2 third-rounders. That's a lot to pay.
Yes, it is.
Not the most it's ever been paid, obviously, to get a quarterback, but we're talking about a guy in Tua that went into last season. The motto was tank for Tua, right? He was the prize in this draft until he got his latest injury. So I just think it's interesting. You know, would I do the same for Derek Brown? Like if he falls to 7? Yeah, I probably would. You know, if you're that close, you got those 3 fourth-round picks. We know you got 2 firsts, you got a 2nd, you got a 3rd, you got 3 in the 4th, 2 in the 5th, 2 in the 6th. You're loaded. If it takes a 4th-round pick to secure getting the guy you absolutely want, then I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I don't know like how much I like Brown more than I like Kinlaw. You know, like personally.
But put it this way: if it's your guy,
and you're
moving
then
up
to
7, and
absolutely.
You're paying a 4th-rounder,
and that's kind of what we're asking this morning, is who is that guy?
Yes.
Almost for people is that you would be, okay, if it gets to 6 or 7.
I do it for Brown. If we're talking about a 4th-rounder, and I'm making sure, and I'm assuming the Jags would have these guys highly regarded and highly rated on the board. So, yeah, I would do something like that. But yeah. I'm not in the market for making that crazy move to go up and get Tua or anybody else.
And it's, you know, the way the draft works out, there's going to be some kind of funkiness in that top 10. There always is. I mean, last year, it was hard to find a mock draft where Allen got past 5, and certainly if he got past 5, he wasn't getting to the Jags at 7. Like, that just wasn't happening in mock drafts you were looking at. It was like, it'd be nice. We talked about it for weeks. It'd be nice if Josh Allen was there at 7.
Right.
That's a no-brainer. He's not going to be there. Like, that was the conversation the whole time.
You never know.
He's not going to be there. And then when the Giants went with Jones, it was like, they're going to be able to get him.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, holy cow, Allen's going to fall to him. And I think that's where the counterargument is to, is it better to just wait? And how much of a gap do you need between the guy that we're talking about, whether it be Okuda or Brown or Kinlaw, any of those guys who may be available to him still at 9, how much of a gap does there need to be for you to be willing to give up anything to make a move up from number 9, especially if we're talking about just trying to get to 6 or 7 with those guys? If it's a quarterback, it's a different animal, right? Like, if you've decided that Tua is the guy for you in this draft, then okay. You know, what you're willing to give up is a different conversation than, we like Okuda a little bit more than we like Derek Brown. You know, like, that's a completely different animal.
Somebody asked on the text line, let's say the Jags were able to acquire a 3rd first-round pick. Do they have the cap space to take that on? Oh, easily.
Easy.
Easily. Right now they have the cap space to take it on. presuming they traded Jan in a deal to acquire that pick, oh my gosh, they'd be swimming in cap space.
Right. And it's
no problem.
They haven't talked about, we've asked some guys, you know, we've talked to D-Rock and Ozier about why isn't Marquise Lee let go yet? Well, because they don't have to yet, right? So there's millions of dollars in space that they can still create if they decide to. So no, I wouldn't be worried about cost for
they don't need to cut pick. Marquise, because right now you don't know where you're going to, like,
no.
You may take a wide receiver in the draft, or maybe the first one you take is in round five, right?
And don't know, yeah.
The way things fall, and you're like, well, that guy might not help us right away. We can afford Marquise for one more year, and we'll bring him on. He's got an $8.75 million cap hit. It's not ideal, but they could afford to do it. By the way, their pool set aside right now based on the picks they have is $13 million. That's already accounted for.
Yeah.
In the salary cap. So when you hear they have estimated cap space of $15 million, SpotTrack has them at 15.7. That includes the recent signees, at least most of them, in there. That's already accounting for Jan and the draft pool. In this, SpotTrack has Eifert's contract, by the way, at 2 years, $9.5 million. We had heard initially 2 years, 15.5. So if these numbers are correct, pretty affordable, actually. His cap hit this year is $3.425 million, a little under $3.5 million for Tyler Eifert. It would balloon to $6 million next year with only $1.1 in dead money. In other words, if they decided to move on from Tyler Eifert after this season, they've got a minimal dead cap hit to carry, and they've got crazy cap space next year. That's not going to be an issue. So, yeah, the cap is not an issue at this point in time. Now, the issue is, Tony, answering the question of the day, give us a sampling of what we got as we asked you today. Is there a player or players you'd be cool with the Jaguars moving up from the ninth pick to acquire the rights in this draft? If so, who are the players, and what would you be willing to pay for that move? And give us a look at, by the way, 56.8% right now said no, there is no player. Mm-hmm. So of the 43% who said yes, give us the players they're most interested in.
From Colby, he said, I would trade up to 7 if Okuda dropped. I would give up 2 of our 4ths to do this. From BRP, we got Tua. He'd give up 920 and a 3rd. To make it happen. From Dave, Jan, and pick number 20. Let's see. Preferred, but most likely number 9, and a late round draft pick to the Redskins for number 2 and take Chase Young.
So he'd give Jan 920 and a late round pick?
He said one of them. Like, I don't think he's...
Jan or 20.
Yeah, Jan, preferred 20, would be willing to give up 9 to move up to 2 to take Young.
Yeah, I'd, if I'm going to do that, I'd prefer to give up Jan. Because he doesn't want to be here anyway, and that's the guy you'd be drafting his replacement right there with the 9th pick. You still have the 20th pick. I'd rather go that route.
Yeah, from Paul, I'd go to 7 for Okuda, give up 2 fourths if he gets past 4. He won't go 5 or 6 unless someone traded up from there to get him, holding until 7. Gives the Jags a little savings on the compensation, but if I'm Carolina, I don't know if I take 2 fours to move back. From JJ, I would trade up for Okuda or Tua if he medically checks out for the Jags.
Okuda, Matuda.
Yeah. Ninth and a 3rd or 4th round pick. And finally from Z, Tua for number 9 and 20.
We get Mekhi Becton in here. We got Okuda. We got Tua. We get some kind of Matuda out of that thing. that we're going to pick from the Matuda pile. We'll have one of the three, please. All right. With that, let's move along and welcome in the esteemed XL Primetime.
Now, the 2-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
Craving queso? Get a free kids' meal with your order, plus free delivery. Order in the app or online at Moe's.com.
Big Sir's in the house. Leon, good morning.
What's going on, gentlemen? How you doing?
We're doing well, man. We're about, a little over 2 weeks out.
No sports.
Charging through all this draft sludge like everybody else is.
Okay. Have you counted how many days we've been without sports? That'd be over 20, 25 days,
right? Is that where we're at right now?
I think we're at 27.
Okay.
27 days without any sports.
We've got the virtual, sport of the NFL draft, sort of, kind of thing. But, yeah, it's been a while.
I enjoyed the heck out of the Ocho.
I didn't. I'm not going down that route. Do you like that kind of stuff? Do you like oddball? How have you filled your sports viewing time, Leon?
I've been going a little bit nostalgic. I've been watching old basketball games, old college football game, NFL game. That's one beautiful thing about YouTube, that you can go back and check out the old games. Nah, I'm a little vain because I'm watching the games I play.
Well, I would too if I were you. If I had games to watch of me, I'd be watching.
Only the good ones.
I would have been watching those the whole time, though, Leon. It was the thing. Did they play the Ripken record breaker?
They did. Yesterday? I watched a couple innings of that yesterday. Yeah.
But, like, all right, once he takes the field, he's broken the record. Like, where's the drama in that? No, I'm serious. Like, I thought about that yesterday. I'm like, why would – I mean, I know what happens.
It was kind of fun because they were still bouncing around, like, doing all the national coverage of it. So they were still going to, like, other stadiums as they were reacting to Ripken. And that was going on throughout the entire broadcast. Like, I watched a couple innings of the game. I actually enjoyed it.
Like I said, if you like it, you like it. Watch whatever you like. As long as you're listening to 1010XL.
Absolutely.
You'll be fine. Now, Leon, what do you guys have cooked up for today?
We're going to talk unique. We're going to talk CBS Sports, the over-under on teams that are going to win. They're over on the, you know, college teams. And at 12:30, I got my former teammate coming in to talk a little Gators football. Ernie Mills.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah, Pittsburgh Steeler, a former teammate there for a long time. And
yeah. Sure, there's going to be Gator overload. I told him to keep it down a little bit.
Yeah,
pipe down. Already gave him the
heads up. Leon's the boss here. All right, Leon, have a good show.
All right, fellas.
There he goes, Leon Searcy, along with Hacker, Matt Hayes, Joe C, coming your way for the next 3 hours. D-Rock will stop by tomorrow.
Yep.
Have a little
can't wait
with Mike DeRocco on the program. And we'll be 2 weeks out from the NFL draft. Guess what we'll have? Some draft-related question of the day, I bet you. I bet you. Who named the 12 players the Jaguars will select in the 2020 NFL draft? Like three people respond to that, you know. We'll get a bunch of guys that are going to be terrible. We'll get that one six times.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll get three people who actually will name 12 players. They'll have been mock drafting, and we'll probably come up with something else is my guess for tomorrow. We appreciate Johnny O for stopping by today. Never really got around to MJD. You might get some of his audio tomorrow. He was on the Franchi show yesterday. If you missed it, listen to the entirety of that interview if you go to 1010XL.com in the on-demand section. All right, for Tony, for E.T., rocking that Phillies gear today.
My favorite.
It's just like your guy Manny Trio. He hates Manny, so I had to throw it in there. I'm Mike Dempsey. We're back tomorrow from 10 to noon talking Jaguars with you. Thanks for tuning in once again to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Yo, Jacksonville. Start taking care of y'all mantles, y'all bodies, and y'all chicken.